It's Susie from MERP, and I'm here with Ryan from Soil. Welcome to Portland. The show last night was awesome.
Well, I thank you for your kindness. It's good to be here. We've been having fun. Headbangers Con. It's good.
How'd you get involved in Headbangers Con?
I have no idea. I think actually, my wife's a tattoo artist from, we live in England, I think Chris got a hold of her. It was tattoo related, and all of a sudden he realized that I was her husband. So all of a sudden she was like, he started talking to her about Headbangers and if I'd be interested in it. And so that's kind of how that whole connection, I think, actually began.
Is your wife from England and that's why
Yes.
you moved up there?
Yes, correct.
So a little bit of a culture shock, I would think. Have you been there a long time?
No, I've been going over to the UK at least once a year for the last 20 some years, touring wise. So I always knew it was a place that I enjoyed. No, I knew what I was getting. I hate the sun, so it's perfect that way. You don't see the sun very often over there, so I love that aspect of it. But no, I knew what to expect, and I really enjoy the people there. I enjoy the no-nonsense aspect of their personalities there in England.
And they're polite.
They are. And it's funny because they are very polite. But there's a no-nonsense way about them that unless you're prepared for it, if you have the slightest thin skin as somebody from here, you very easily, I can see where you could take something wrong, take it the wrong way from what they say. But they don't mean anything by it. They're telling you the sky's blue. You may not like the way they say it, but they're just letting you know the sky's blue.
What a better way to live. That saves on so
right.
much crap.
Right, it is real.
So your career has spanned 20 years plus.
Yeah.
21 years.
Yeah, that's why I got that chrome stripe in my beard.
We're all getting that way. I don't have a beard.
It's classic chrome. It's not white. It's classic chrome.
What is your proudest moment of your career?
I spent some years with a band called Drowning Pool, and we got really involved. And, I mean, today's Veterans Day, so good time to mention it, I guess. It's funny, or not mention it, but it's funny that the question comes up because I think probably the most humbling experience, one of the neatest experiences of my life was doing the USO shows and stuff with Drowning Pool. We did so many. We did South Korea runs, doing military bases in Japan. But probably the neatest ones is we did two tours over in Iraq and Kuwait during it was back in 2005 and 2006 for those two runs. Those were by far the neatest experiences.
Were you ever fearful over there?
I think the most fearful moment, I take that back. There was a couple. I think the most fearful moment was the first time we went over was at the airport, and Tracy, our main chaperone with the USO, she handed us out the paperwork, the waivers to sign, basically saying the government cannot be held responsible if anything happens to us. And that's when it really set in the... What do you mean it's a waiver?
Waiver for what?
She goes, well, you're going to a war zone. In case something happens, we're not responsible. And I was like, huh. That's when it set in. But there was moments. We were in a hospital in Baghdad visiting wounded soldiers there. They had incoming. And so the air raid sirens are going off, and we hit the deck. We did exactly what they told us to. We're sitting there, heads on the ground, hands over our heads, and laying there. And then all of a sudden, maybe a minute and a half goes by, probably less than that, really. But we start hearing laughing and clicking of cameras. And we kind of look up, and the doctors and everybody had their flak jackets on now, but they're all taking pictures of us and laughing. They're like, yeah, let the bodies hit the floor. Ah, ha, ha. they had a good kick out of it. So, but that moment where you realize that, yeah, we're getting fired upon, that was unsettling.
That's a great story, though. Winning Metal Edge magazine in 2001 as the next big thing, how important was that to the band's success?
Obviously, they were so wrong. That was way to miss that one, Metal Edge. No, that was all that stuff from back then. Just because we thought we had our shot and we were done. A lot of people think of Scars as being the first record that Soil did. It's the first record people know of. We did one full length and an EP on a label out of New York City called MIA. We did an EP with a label out of, like little independent labels, with a label out of Chicago before Scars ever came about. So, and like the full length on MIA, that record label went out of business 30 days after they released the record. So the sales on it was horrible. But there's no asterisk, you know, in that chart or whatever it is of sales. You have this horrible, crappy number. But there's no asterisk on it that says label went out of business 30 days. So we had our shot, you know. We thought that we had our shot, and luck didn't shine upon us. So when we got the opportunity to all of a sudden, when we got everybody's attention again somehow by the grace of Jeebus or George Burns or whoever was involved, it was awesome. So anytime we got any little write-up or any little attention like that, it was, I think, even twice as much neat, because we were lifelong dreamers of doing this, that we thought we had our shot, and, you know, we're glad that you had your shot, but we thought we had it, and we rolled the old snake eyes.
Yeah, most people don't get to.
Right, and we were lucky enough. We were in the right place at the right time.
So when I talk to musicians, most people say they write for themselves first. But I was wondering...
Those selfish bastards.
I was wondering, if you wrote an album and across the board critics hated it, fans hated it, would you take that into consideration in writing the next one?
Yeah, I would not submit it to those people again to review it, that's for sure. I'd probably just send it to my family. They're usually... No, actually, they're mean as fuck, too. I think a really good example of... I'm a talker, I do apologize, but
I love it.
I think, like what you're asking me, can I be summed up with the fact that, you know, when my first run with Soil from 97 to 2004, we did Scars and Redefine. I think maybe that was it, as far as major releases on, studio releases on J Records, before I left the band. And then you fast forward to 2012, when we got back together after the Drowning Pool days. We got back together with Soil. I got back together with Soil, and we released the album Hole. And there was that, I think it was really kind of, we had written the album, and it was kind of like pre-production mode, where you're in the studio just kind of like finally getting a recording version of what you've been throwing back and forth at each other. But all of a sudden it hit me. It was kind of like, I wonder how the old school fans are going to take this. You know, I wonder if it's going to appease them. Or if they're going to hear it and be like, that's not Soil. And at the end of the day, the result that we got, the opinions that we got back, was like, this is the album that should have followed Redefined. You know, there was a couple albums there, Soil-wise, when I wasn't with the band, but they were like, this is the record that should have followed the originals. And it was a great response. And what I mean by that is, I think at the end of the day, this band has always just been capable of writing what we write. It's never been like a mindset of, you know, we've never been talented enough to be a Queensryche and do an Operation Mindcrime and have a theme or anything like that. I've never been a writer in the aspect that I'm not like a Bruce Dickinson or a James Hetfield that can take a topic from a book that I've read. Number one, I don't read, but I've never been talented in that manner to be able to take like a subject and wrap my head around. I've just always written about my own life experiences. The band... It's still the same guys. You know, that's what the thing we learned about Hole is, it's still the same guys that wrote those records at the end of the day. So it's just what comes naturally. So it's never like if somebody came at us and went, that's rubbish, we'd just be like, oh, well, shit, I guess you don't like us then, because that's just what we are.
That's one thing that's nice about...
It took me a long time to get there.
It was a great answer.
I think we passed Big Ben in Parliament at least 5 times.
That's one of the nice things about Soil, is it doesn't feel like you guys have a formula or, I mean...
Absolutely not.
Soil
no.
feels very organic to me.
And
I think that's nice.
We stumble upon most everything.
It's a good stumble. So you mentioned the few years that you weren't there, that you took a little break and did Drowning Pool. When the albums came out with alternative singers...
Right, AJ.
Was it hard to... I mean, were you critical of it?
I never heard it.
I wondered how that worked. If you're gone for a while, are you listening like, oh, I would have done something different here, or...
No, I've never heard, still to this day. We played a couple songs from that era that I wasn't a part of. So those songs I've heard, because I had to work on them. But other than that, I've not ever listened to any of the Soil stuff that I wasn't a part of. I'm that way with the Drowning, and it's no knock. It's not like I'm not going to listen to it. I don't listen there's like a few bands that I listen to. Other than that, if I'm in a situation where music's playing, I usually have my car set over to sports talk radio. So
obviously.
Right. The Browns have to be doing something positive.
We're going to wrap it up so you can check. What is the band or singer, I guess I'm going to say singer, that inspired you to want to be a singer?
You know, I grew up in a house where my dad was always listening to music, and like my dad was one of five main guys at this glass factory. The little tiny little town in Indiana that I grew up in was everybody that lived there and lived in the surrounding areas were employed by these two big glass factories, and my dad was one of the higher ups there, and then my mom was a school teacher, so I was always Mike and Susie's boy. But in the evening when the door closed, no one could tell. When they walked in the living room, nobody could tell because of the furniture. Nobody knew that behind the furniture in each corner of the room was these great big stereo cabinets. And as soon as the door closed for the evening, Dad would have his Aerosmith or Pink Floyd or AC/DC playing or Grateful Dead. He loved a variety of music, Dylan. And then my brother was 5 years older than me, so he was into Zeppelin and... eventually, he got into the hair metal days, and he introduced me to Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses and all that. Even beyond that, your Bang Tangos and your L.A. Guns and all that. But so I grew up with music, but it wasn't everybody's got those bands that were then theirs. That band for me was Alice in Chains. That was that first band that Layne Staley could have been singing about an empty pop can, but the way he wrote, as a listener, I always felt like he was singing about whatever it was I was going through at that moment in my young life. And he just had that way about him. He had that ability to write like that. And I know a lot of times it was actually Jerry. So it was a combination. I'll hand it to both of them. But yeah, that combination of Jerry and Layne was that vocal lyricist combination that I never wanted to be a singer. But if I had to point at one that was like, man, that would be that combo that would have been the inspiration.
Alice in Chains was an amazing band. When you think about like Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Alice in Chains, and Soundgarden, I didn't like Nirvana, Pearl Jam, but I went the other way, and Alice in Chains was very special.
Yeah, I agree completely.
What is your wish for Soil for the rest of this year and next year?
Well, I don't know. I think being allowed to do this for 20-some years, just being able to still do it, is such a gift. We thought we had our shot and failed miserably. So the fact that we can go play a show and people still turn out, the fact that I can get online and write one of my stupid brain fodders and people reply and give me the time of day is pretty friggin' amazing. So I don't have any plans. Me and Adam have been writing for the last 3 months, so I know we got a lot of material. There's been a lot of talk about putting stuff out there, but just the fact that we're still able to do it, I think is so awesome that I really don't have any goals set in mind. It's just like, I'll take whatever people are willing to allow us to do. It's pretty awesome.
I love you and your band even more now, just your organic, natural flow and feel. That's a great way to live.
I appreciate it.
I have 12 quick questions we're asking everybody so we can do an editorial.
Yeah, I like the way you said quick questions. You know that's not going to happen.
No, you talk as long as you want. I cleared my recorder.
Cool, good. Maybe a couple more.
I have a second recorder as well.
Nice.
Favorite thing to do in Portland?
This is my first time actually having time here. Instead of just like an in and out for a show. Headbangers Con at this point in time. This will be the most time I've had here. So I've just really enjoyed this weekend, what Chris has put together. The industry is so messed up right now that people like Chris are thinking outside the box and giving the industry, in particular the metal rock industry, another avenue to connect with fans has been pretty smart on his part and very... very good for the... So this weekend, it brings up. Sorry.
You know, it was funny, Friday night, that party upstairs.
Yes.
You know what it felt like to me? Like Chris won the lottery and just said, I'm going to
right.
I have a ton of money. I'm a millionaire now. I'm just going to have a party. That's what it felt like. That was such a nice a nice event.
Yeah. I'm very, I'm not a real social person. So it was that typical, I'd usually be back at the hotel in that situation, but it was cool. It was really neat. And I was comfortable with it. It was neat to be a part of and just see old friends and new friends. And it was a good time.
We talked about this briefly, but first band that made you love music?
First band, probably CCR, Creedence.
Best part of being a musician?
I'm not chopping my fingers off on woodworking anymore, so that's always a positive.
Favorite thing to do in the band, writing, recording, touring, or videos?
You know, when the first several years of being allowed to do this professionally, I always, well, number one, I wasn't an alcoholic back in the day, so it was a little different. But I always enjoyed the writing process. I loved me and Adam sitting in the garage and watching a riff become a song, and then the song gathered the drums and gathered the bass and gathered all the limbs to it and everything, and then going into the pre-production and watching it grow at that point, and then taking it into the studio and watching it grow from that point till you're done with it. And really, you're not done until you take it out to the crowd. And I used to think, yeah, it was being in the studio. That was artistic way of looking at things. I love the studio time. But now that I'm older, and maybe it's that you see the writing on the wall, and you know you're not going to be able to do this forever. You know, none of us made, we never made no Metallica money or Rolling Stones money at this. So there's an expiration date on us, and we know that. So it's like nowadays, it's every chance we get to go out there and play a show live. I think I know I enjoy it way more than I even used to, just for the fact that you know, that every chance you get to look out there and see that. That's cool. We all came out here. It's going to be a good time.
When you were talking about the writing process being, you know, one of your favorite things early on, I'm not a musician, and I always wondered, how do you know when a song is done? Is it just a feeling? Is it a time constraint?
It could be either one, depending on the situation. Yeah, we did. There was, I remember back an album, the album Redefined, there was a song on there called Pride, and we did a demo version of that song that the label fell in love with so much so that when it came time to go to the studio, we couldn't capture whatever it is that they fell in love with. So we recorded it with Johnny Kay in Chicago, where we did the record. We did probably a dozen versions of that song. And then finally they sent us out to L.A. with Nick Raskulinix to do like another version of it. So at that point we thought we were just going to release a Best of Pride and just do like 10 versions of that song. But that, you know, that was one example of just as crazy as the writing process can be. And sometimes you just catch lightning in a bottle and you throw a song out, you know, like Drowning Pool. The most successful song in the band's history, radio-wise, was a song called 37 Stitches. And I was lucky enough to be a part of, and that song was just an accident. But the album was written, the album was done, and all of a sudden we just accidentally stumbled upon that song, and it was written and done in a snap of a finger. Each song is different in that way. They're all, some of your kids are stupid and some of them are scholars, and it's the music's a lot like that.
What makes a better band, talent or drive?
I'm going to say drive. If it wouldn't have been, I mean, because I've shared the stage with a lot more talented people than I am that never got the chance. There's so much of being in the right place at the right time, but putting yourself in that right place to be in that right place at the right time is the drive. You know, and so yeah, I'd say drive.
Harder or easier to make it today for bands?
I'm going to go with harder, because even when you make it today, it doesn't mean anything. I don't mean to say, look at the festivals, not just in the States, but in Europe and the UK. It's the same bands headlining the festivals today that headlined them 20 years ago. If you didn't make a name for yourself 20 years ago, in today's climate, even if you've signed, doesn't mean anything. I my heart goes out to them, because harder today. I don't want to discourage anybody.
It's easier to get out there for sure with social media and the internet.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm amazed. Some of my favorite bands. I'm a melodic European death metal fan, mm-hmm. and how many of them have to have day jobs? You know,
yeah.
It's so sad to me.
Absolutely.
I just can't believe that happens.
Since moving to the UK, I manage three bands from over there, and it's hard for me to balance being real and being encouraging. So it's,
if you weren't a musician, what occupation do you think you would do?
I went to college for mechanical drafting and design, so I'd probably be sitting at a table drawing something tedious and looking for what window to jump out of. Yeah, a draftsman of some sort.
Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Global warming? No, I don't.
I'm good. All the time in the world.
We could go on about football, but you're just going to hate life at that point, so we'll just leave it alone.
Thank you so much.
For leaving out football? No, you're welcome.
That too.